Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life Radio. I'm Kimberly Saavedra, Director of the Comlock Center, and my two co-hosts here tonight are Dr. Betty Kovach and Janet Mayer, a Forever Family Certified Medium. We're so happy you joined us, and the first order of business is to give you the call-in number so that you can share your stories with us. 888-627-6008 or 323-744-4831. And tonight, Janet will start us off.
Hi, Janet. Thank you. And I would just like to add, you know, we're really, as our format for every month is adding in, you know, any stories that anybody wants to call in, we'd love to hear them. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it just has to be a significant story to you. That's the most important thing. That's what we're here for. It's we, you know, all want to share our stories. And I'm going to begin with kind of a little bit off the wall story, but it's kind of a cool story. And I guess this was about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. There was a Forever Family Foundation conference in Fort Myers, Florida. And, you know, I was invited to go, and I was one of the speakers along with a number of other Forever Family Foundation mediums. And, you know, I got there, and I was in my room and unpacking and put everything away. And the first night we were there, we were kind of, it was an introduction in a way. Everybody was going to find out what was going on for the weekend. And one thing I always do is I always ask Spirit to be with me. You know, when there's a conference like this, I always envision everyone who shows up is bringing their loved ones, bringing any of their, what they would call a guide or an angel or anybody who they feel is on the other side helping them. And so I always feel like there's going to be a room full of, you know, beings around us. So, the first evening starts and we're all sitting around together, and, you know, they're telling us about what's going on, and I believe one of the mediums was doing some readings that night, and I get back to the room, and I walk in my door, and I look up, and the TV that was, you know, on the console is completely turned sideways, and it just stopped me cold because I thought, you know, was somebody in my room? Was somebody doing something? And I looked around, and there was nothing that had happened. And I went up to the TV, and I thought, oh, maybe it was really loose, and it was, you know, one of those that you can move back and forth. And it took a little effort to get it back in place. And I sat there, and I started laughing, and I thought, okay, this is how the weekend is going to go, right? So I thought, okay, I'm going to turn on TV. I turn on the TV, and I busted out laughing. It was the movie Ghost was on, and Whoopi Goldberg, who plays Oda Mae Brown, she was the medium. She was talking to Demi Moore, and I just sat there and I started laughing because I felt like it was a really cool sign from the other side that, okay, it's going to be one of these weekends that there's going to be a lot happening, so just pay attention. But it was a really cool story, and, you know, it was a really kind of lovely experience too, because, you know, I kind of automatically or immediately when I got there had an experience. And, you know, throughout the weekend there were a couple other little things that happened here and there, but I just thought that was a really funny situation because, you know, you don't expect something for that to happen. I expect something to happen possibly when I'm doing a reading or before a reading. And for something like that, it kind of threw me, and I just kind of started laughing because I thought it was kind of cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's sometimes those experiences that at first you don't really know what in the world, how does this fit in? and then you realize, yeah.
Right.
If we just would pay attention and ask the significance of events, you know, very often we just let them pass, you know, as, oh, that was interesting or that was strange.
Right. Well, and I think it's just being aware. Like you said, pay attention. That's one of my favorite all-time lines, is to pay attention, especially if, you know, you have lost a loved one, if they've transitioned to the spirit world, and you're wanting to connect with them, and you've either already had an experience and you want another experience, you know, you have to kind of form some kind of practice or spiritual practice. It's kind of just like going to school. You know, you have to take time. You have to pay attention to your surroundings. You have to pay attention to your practice. You have to focus on what's happening, and even like with all of your senses. And, you know, you have to kind of study and take time for yourself to do this, and you have to do it. And I think that a lot of people are thinking, oh, well, it's just either going to happen or not happen. And I think it's kind of making that intention and paying attention and putting it out there and surrounding yourself in this energy and using your senses. You know, it's not just one sense. It's using all of your senses and opening them up, because you may hear a word. You might hear, you know, a loved one come to you and speak something, or you might see them, or you might feel it, or you may dream it, you know, and there's so many different angles that our loved ones can come to us, that I think that it's a really big message for people to stay aware.
That is so true, and all of that helps create the space for the communion that takes place every day in so many different ways in different people's lives. And we have Dave from Rhode Island on the line with us. Good evening, Dave. Thank you for calling in.
Janet, this is Dave Kane.
Oh, hi.
As you know, I've been involved with helping the Forever Family Foundation for a while now, my wife and I. But I wanted to let people know, Janet, I know you know, I've written a book called 41 Signs of Hope. And the book is chock full of signs that we have received from our son, Nicky, since he passed in the Station nightclub fire in 2003. And I wanted to give you a couple of quick little things as an example, but the book is named 41 Signs of Hope because Nicky's number was 41. We all have lucky numbers, as you know. Mm-hmm. And his was 41. He didn't know why. We didn't know why. Couldn't figure it out. But it was always something that he'd point out and say. Well, when he passed, he was 18 and 23 days, 41. The Station nightclub where the fire occurred was at latitude 41.41.
Wow.
The fire call box at the station is 4414. And on the cover of my book is a sketch of Nicky from a videotape we found a year after he passed. And in the videotape, his mom's holding him. He's about 4 months old. And he has a little baseball uniform on, and the number on the cap is 41.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have had amazing, amazing stories and amazing things that have happened. I'd like to tell you one more quick one and then tell you something that we're doing. Bob invited me to call tonight. So after Nicky passed, it was a horrible fire. It was the fourth largest nightclub fire in the country's history. And Nicky was the youngest victim. He was just 18. And my wife worried that he suffered in the blaze, that he felt the flames. And he was in pain. It drove her crazy. And every medium we went to said to us the same thing. They said, no pain. When we asked them, they'd say, that phrase, no pain. When we didn't ask, they'd offer it, no pain. Well, still, every now and then, my wife would start to worry, and it was a Christmas. We were tagging a Christmas tree one day, and she was in that mode again, and being the kind, loving husband that I am, I was screaming at her and saying to her, when are you going to get it? How many times is this kid going to tell you? Every medium has told us, no pain, no pain. You know, I mean, everybody we know is no pain. We get in the car, we're going up the hill, and I say to my wife, what do you want this kid to do? Put it in writing? And as soon as I said that, a car coming from the other direction had the vanity plate, no pain.
Oh, God. That is so amazing.
And so I want to let people know these signs are real, and they're not imagining them. And the idea of my talk and my book is to help validate for people in their hearts that their loved ones are just letting them know that all is fine. And I'm writing a new book, and this is also called 41 Signs of Hope, Your Stories. And I'm inviting people to do what you're doing tonight, which is to send to me their stories, and I'm going to compile a book of them so people can see the coincidences that are very similar and very much real, and to help validate it for other people. And if anybody wants to participate, they can just contact me via my webpage, Dave Kane, K-A-N-E, DaveKane.net, and I'd love to hear from them.
Dave, I heard you speak. This is Betty. I heard you speak in Connecticut. You gave the introductory speech, and Kim and I both heard.
Yeah,
we were so impressed with all of the signs that you and your wife had received. But I just wanted to add that my son was killed in an automobile accident when he was 20, and he was thrown out of the car through the windshield into a truck that was stopped blocking the way. He was coming around a corner on the freeway, and the truck had stalled there, and there were no signs. Emergency signs, and just that image of him flying out of the windshield, through the windshield, and hitting that truck, and then flying back into the car, fell back into the car. And so my husband and I both, of course, just like you and your wife, were concerned about the pain. And precisely that's the message we received from him, both of us, is that I had no pain. There was no pain.
Yeah, I believe that
the other kind of experiences you did with the science, but we were convinced that there was no pain.
Yeah, I believe that spirit leaves the body before that happens, and I think that that's what people need to know. That I think your brain looks and sees what's going to happen, says, "Oh no, we're not having any of this," and shuts it down.
So
you don't have to worry about people. You hear about people in airplane accidents and decapitation and all these horrible things, but the people to whom it happened have no recollection or feeling of that, in my opinion, at all. They just wake up and say, "Oh, what happened? It's over." You know.
I agree. And my husband was killed 2 years later in another car accident, and I had an experience. Him in which he said the soul was out of the body before the body hit the ground.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's gone. It's, "Oh no, I'm out of here." You know, and so I want people to understand that's really the situation, and not to beat yourself up. You know, if somehow people have this need to make it worse in their heads and to conjure up thought process that they don't need. They need to just have faith and believe that our loved ones are alive and safe. Nicky wrote a play a year before he died, and the play is called They Walk Among Us. The play is about teenagers who die and come back as angels.
Oh, my God.
And
oh my
one God. Of the last one of the last lines of the play is, Grace, the angel, is trying to help a boy. He says to him, "In the end, everything, and I do mean everything, is going to be just fine." And that's what we need to have the faith in. And the last line of the play is, "Do not fear, to hope." So we put that on Nick's headstone. And so
that
people
is so
need to
beautiful.
Know.
Well, yes, I knew you had written that book, and I have not bought it, and I intend to do so now, to read more, to hear more. I really think
I wish you would, because, you know, with COVID, you know, I've been out of work for 5 months, so selling a book would be really great for me.
On a side note, yeah, we understand
that.
That
is a joke. Okay.
That's 41 Signs of Hope, Dave Kane, and we hope those listeners will take advantage of the insights and experiences that are in there. From Nikki.
Yes.
Yeah, but
thank
also
you.
I want to make sure
that's inspiring.
Let
so inspiring to hear
that.
All of that.
And best of luck
thank
with
you so much.
41 Signs of Hope, Your Story.
Yeah, your story. That's good.
That's really good. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yes, he has so many, there are so many wonderful stories from Nikki that has come, that amazing. And I totally agree. As he said, and both of you too, Betty, that, you know, your soul does leave your body. We always think that we're our body, that there isn't anything else. It's, you know, we have a soul. We're a spirit within the body, and we leave that, you know, before they don't have that pain. And it's so important, and to receive those messages, those personal messages, and they do kind of, they are, you know, mind-blowing, because it's just so the messages are so beautiful, and they give so much comfort. So I totally, he has a great book, and I love that he's putting another one together. I think that's wonderful.
Yes, of other people's, that he will take that time and energy and dedication to get other people's story in that book. I think he had so many, though, incredible signs. I mean, imagine that license plate. It's just amazing. And I'm wondering, you know, if we're more open, does that allow more of that to happen? And also, their son must have been quite extraordinary, too. He may well have had ability to help those messages get through. I think that sometimes we forget that the person on the other side has a lot to do with our receiving these messages.
Oh, yeah, and that they want to be in touch as well.
So. Well, and don't you think, too, that your senses are heightened because of that? So you do have a connection. You know, you have more of a connection with, you know, losing, like, your son. And you feel like that it's just heightened those senses so much that it does make you open, even when you may not be thinking you're open. You know, it is. It's kind of like you're suddenly tuned in to, you know, another dimension or another place, and that's where they are, and they're right here next to you at the same time, and you can get this information from them.
Yes, I certainly, when a child dies, the parents are, they're opened in a way that probably they couldn't be opened in any other way. And I think that we had visions that, and my husband just, and going to work and coming back, I mean, he felt like there was a record playing and trying to remind him of everything he'd forgotten in this life. So it was just totally cracked open, you know, the heart, and allowed us to have some of the experiences we had. So, yes, we are drawn to the other side because we know that our child is there. And in regular life, there's so many things to take our attention and things we think we have to do. But when something like a death happens, as the poet said, we are sternly stopped. And
right.
That's a good thing.
Yes. And I think, too, it's you ignore your limitations. You no longer are thinking a certain way because everything has been turned upside down. You know,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, these limitations that you think we all have, or anyone thinks they have, it changes because they're not there anymore, because we kind of put them aside because there's something more important, which is a child or a loved one, you know, anyone who has passed. You now have that to focus on. So your limitations of what you thought are out the window, and now you can connect.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I was thinking of an experience that I had when I was in South America, and I had gone on a trip with a group, and we worked with a shaman from the Amazon. And on the last evening that we were there, we went to it wasn't Huayna Picchu. We were there before in Machu Picchu. But we went to a place outside of Puno at Suistani, which has the tall, circular grave markers. And it was known as a very visionary, spiritual place where probably initiations had taken place earlier. And we chanted, we were there all day meditating, and then we were in a stone circle, and we were chanting, and I suddenly looked up on the mountain that was in front of us, and I saw all of these spirit people. I thought maybe they were real people, and I thought I was in my sort of rational brain at the time. That was before any of the deaths had occurred, and I thought, they must have brought some people in from Puno to get on the mountain and try to make us think there was a spirit. I mean, so bad was my mind at that time. And then, just as I thought that, so they knew what I was thinking, because then they began to move in sort of a watery way, so I could see they weren't real bodies of people, but they really were like spirits. And they had headdresses and staffs, and there was even a dog that ran down the mountain. And then suddenly I looked and saw a person, I thought perhaps a man, and he couldn't have been a real person because he stepped off the mountain and started walking toward us. And the moment that he started coming toward us, I looked away, and I realized that I was not ready to see what happened. I later heard from one of the shamans that he did come into our stone circle. But having seen that, it created, I didn't know what it was, really. I didn't know what had happened. But I knew that I had experienced something that my rational brain could not explain. And so I think I mentioned that because I think sometimes we have to live with strange experiences. We don't really know the full meaning of them, but we know that something unusual happened. And that was one of the first experiences for me that did open me up, because I had to admit something that was outside the explanation of my rational brain had happened, and that began to change me.
Right, and it sounds like it, because you basically ignored any limitations you had, and it took you out there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah. Well, my limitation was not being able to face it all, and I turned away, I guess, but that's okay. I think that that's where I was at the time, and I changed, and I was able to then go head on, but not at that time. And I think we have to just realize whatever limitations we have at the time, we recognize them, and we can even accept, I don't understand this, but I know that something's unusual. I had always hoped and longed to know and experience other dimensions of reality, but I wasn't sure they existed. And so I had spent my life studying that. I'd had many, many dreams that guided me, but that was the beginning, and later came the deaths, and then the deaths opened both my heart, my mind, and my husband, too, so that our lives were totally changed.
Right, and I could see why, you know. I mean, you know, and the thing, too, is I think for everyone, some days, you know, some days are stronger than others. Some days you feel really in tune with someone, and other days, you know, you don't feel it. But a lot of times you might not need it. And I think that's something, too, that, you know, working with clients is they'll say, well, you know, I need a sign, and I've asked for a sign, and I didn't get it. Why didn't I get something? Or why wasn't I shown this? And I'm like, you know, I always feel like they come when you really need it. You know, they really do. When you need something, someone shows up. There's someone there, and they give you what you need. And that can go for anything. And I think, you know, not too long ago I had, I don't know, there was a lot going on, and it was just like a really heavy time, I guess I could say. There was a lot of things were happening really fast around me. And I just was like, you know, I just kind of imagined my mom, who's on the other side now, and I was like, I would have loved to just sit with you, Mom, and just talk and have a conversation about all of this. I would have just loved to have, you know, another viewpoint. And I thought, well, I know she's around, but, you know, if you're around, and I got thinking about it, I thought, what could she do? And I'm like, you know, my mom played the pianos, and she collected little pianos, little, you know, collectibles. And I'm like, okay, how about a piano? Just give me a piano. And I thought, I probably shouldn't ask. Maybe I don't need it enough. But I thought, no, there was a lot going on, and I'm just going to ask. And I thought, here I'm at home. Where am I going to see a piano? You know, I'm not going out anywhere. You know, with COVID going on, I really didn't want to go out as little as possible. And I think it was a couple hours later I turned on TV for something, and the first thing that showed up on the TV was a piano.
That's so amazing.
Nice timing.
And the interesting thing for me is, you know, I don't watch all that much TV, but it seems like if I ask something that when it's a really big day or something really big is going on, and I turn it on, something usually pops up somewhere, and I'm like, well, okay, whatever. But on this day, it popped up immediately, and I just was like, okay, thank you. And I was like, well, was that just luck? Did I just somehow psych that, and that was going to happen around that time anyway? I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And
you can't do that.
Well,
you know, when you mentioned your mother, it just reminded me of an experience after PhD, our son, died. And it was just so, so difficult in the beginning. Although I always had that intuition, something big was going on, you know, that there was much, much bigger here than I had allowed myself earlier to think. And I had a vision of my mother on the other side. She had died 1 year before our son. As a matter of fact, when our son was in the accident, he had the accident at exactly the same time that she had had her accident, 1 year to the day and to the hour. So 1 year later, at the very same hour, Pishti was in his car accident, the same time as my mother. So I had an experience in a vision of my mother, and she was crying on the other side. And that really disturbed me, because I wondered, what is happening to her on the other side that would be the case? And then the next day, I was meditating, and suddenly I just knew, I felt, it was that I knew it from feeling. She was in the room with me, and she wanted me to know that she was crying with me, that of course she was concerned about how I was experiencing this. And it hadn't even occurred to me at the time that she was suffering for me on the other side. But when she was in the room the next day with me, or I felt her presence, I simply knew that. And I found it very important that scientists who are working with the mind today know, many of them, not all, know that feeling is a way of knowing, and that we truly should trust that feeling. When someone has an experience and they say, oh, it was so real, it was realer than real, but I just can't put it in words, you said that feeling is certainly evidence of its truth.
Right.
And I ran across this afternoon, and I wanted to just read it, that Andrew Newberg and Eugene DeQuille have done considerable amount of brain research, and this is what they say: there is nothing we have found in science or reason to refute the concept of a higher mystical reality. The wisdom of the mystics has predicted for centuries what neurology now shows to be true. And I think it's just good for us to know that science now knows that we have a mind that is evolved to connect with people we love in another dimension and the other dimension itself, that is quite natural. And one of the ways of knowing is through feeling.
Yes, I definitely agree. And that's what I, earlier when I was talking about all the senses, I mean, that's huge. And that's how you know. And, you know, that's why people are always thinking, well, I didn't see them, but I kind of felt this. And you're like, well, that's it. That's it. You know, that's what you might make it. Or, you know, everybody has their own angle. Even though we're all human, we are all a soul or spirit in a human body, we still all react a little differently. And, you know, you could say, oh, I had the same, or it was similar, but it's still coming from your heart and from your senses. Oh, excuse me.
Yes.
But, I mean, I just, you know, I think that's beautiful, Betty, and I think that's true, is when you saw that with your mother and you felt that and you were trying to figure out what it was. And that's another thing, that when you were talking about that, it really hit me, because I also feel like there's a lot of people out there that will say, well, I saw this, so it has to be bad. And they don't allow themselves to explore to find out what it really is or what it really means. They need to, like, let go and be open and say, okay, let me find out what this is. Why did they come to me, and why did I get this feeling? What does that mean? And I think
I think it's important not to try to interpret it too soon if we're not sure. I mean, sometimes we feel very strongly about it, and that's a good sign. But sometimes we're not certain. And I know in my own experience I've had dreams that I did not understand, but they were big dreams, and I knew they were important. And sometimes it would be a decade before I would get another piece of that puzzle. And actually, throughout my life, the pieces of this puzzle have come together. But I had to practice what the poet Keats called negative capability. Hold it in my mind without interpreting it or making a decision about it or understanding it. Because sometimes the pieces come far apart. And I understood certain things about the dream, and they helped me at the time. But then later, with another piece of the puzzle, I understood more. So I think it's important to be patient, be very, very patient with the process.
Right.
And ourselves, yeah, Kim, that's true.
Right. That's right. Well, we'd like to invite the callers the listeners to participate in this conversation as we explore different types of experiences that people have, what they mean, how we can integrate them into our daily lives. And one way that we can do that is during this show once a month when you're invited to call and share your own personal stories. The dial-in number is 1-888-627-6008 or 323-744-4831. We'd love to hear from you this evening. And I know Betty has a story to share.
Oh, I do. Kim, when I was thinking about what to share tonight, Kim said, well, what about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross? I wrote about her in Merchants of Light.
Yes.
And, of course, most people do know of her. She was one of the first ones who really came forward and said there is another dimension. And when we die, we go to that dimension. Consciousness continues to live. She had had children and other people who had had powerful near, or as they say in the UK, actual death experiences. And so she knew they existed, although she herself had never had one. But she had a kind of out-of-body experience because she was involved in a research project on out-of-body experiences. And she went out, and when she returned, she had no memory of what had happened to her, but she knew she had been healed of a bowel obstruction and a slipped disc. Now, that would be enough for me, even if I didn't experience anything. The very fact that she actually had something so profound happened to her. But the next evening when she was in the Blue Ridge Mountains and she was in a room alone, she said she began to go through the experiences of death of all of her patients. And she was so ridiculed and so demeaned and so criticized. It was a very difficult thing. She was really the one who blazed the trail in a way. And so she felt that she had to go through the death of every one of her patients. And she thought she couldn't bear it. She just thought, I cannot bear this. But she said when she realized that if she just said, okay, yes, I'll accept this, I'll experience this, then all of that pain disappeared.
Wow.
And she began to feel then an intense vibration in her stomach that then spread throughout her body. And then she felt that vibration going to the entire planet. And then she saw just the bud of a beautiful flower that appeared and gradually opened to the light. And it was the kind of light that her patients had told her so often. And she walked toward it and entered into that light, and she became one with it. This is her description of it. She said, at that moment, everything stopped, and I experienced a deep and pervasive silence. I felt a love so vast and so complete that I knew I would never be able to express it in words. She was in love, she said, with the universe, with everyone and every living thing. I so love that experience, because when we do have that wonderful experience of just being in that space and loving, realizing that's the core, the heart of the cosmos. And she said later, I realized I had experienced cosmic consciousness, which is something that Richard Maurice Bach, it was a doctor of Walt Whitman, had such an experience, and he called it cosmic consciousness, but he had an experience in which everything was light and love, and he knew that this is what we would all experience eventually, that we would all be totally in that light and love and happiness, and that we were all immortal. So as the earth was a living being, as we, of course, and that there would be a time when we'd all know that. But I loved Elizabeth Kubler-Ross because she was someone that we could kind of know, and her experience was so powerful.
Yeah, sounds like it. I mean, it's amazing, too, even, you know, you explaining it was beautiful, and it teaches us lessons of love, and, you know, that's profound. You know, we miss the people on the other side, and this is such a connection to them from, you know, from there to here or here to there, and, I mean, it's beautiful.
That's right. And they say what has been connected is never truly ever separated.
Not ever.
That's right. Well, we have Susan on the phone. Hi, Susan. Thank you for calling.
Hello, I'm I identify as Susan Robbins' twin because my identical twin has passed away. And by the way, for the Forever Family Foundation, people that have lost a twin, there's an organization called Twinless Twins at twinlesstwins.org. It's a wonderful support group.
Thank you for saying
not very well known, yes. But she was Robin, I'm Susan, and we were very close. We had Twin Horizons Travel Agency in Dublin, Ohio. We had a business. And on our birthday, one year, 30 years into our business, we were told she had stage 3 ovarian cancer, which had metastasized. We ended up at MD Anderson. But we had never missed a day of school, never missed a day of work, never been ill in our lives. We have two younger brothers who had allergies and asthmas and so forth. So anyway, after her passing, well, the day she died, I tried to go with her, and our friends and family said Susan Robin got there and pushed you back. We have a number of suicides among the twinless twins. I just wanted to be with my sister. And I tell people this because I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and it was very important that I be here. Our dad died a year after Robin did, 2 weeks prior to Mom and Dad's 50th, the wedding anniversary of Alzheimer's. My mother immediately got another kind of cancer, and I was her primary caregiver till she died 2.5 years later. But
oh my goodness.
We didn't understand, well, I still have our brothers, but what we didn't, and a lot of friends, is that we didn't know much about after-death communication. And our sister-in-law, our one sister-in-law, will tell you that if the Schneiders, that's her last name, if the four of them don't know anything, they read a book. So I'm a walking bibliography on after-death experiences and how the different religions approach the afterlife. And the first time I heard from Robin, I was so surprised. I was with my sister-in-law. We were going into a lecture, and we were standing in the powder room of the auditorium, you know, looking in the mirror, and how often had my sister and I looked in the mirror and seen two identical reflections looking back at each other. And I was talking to Elaine, and all of a sudden I heard, and clear as a bell in my head, give Elaine a hug for me. And I gave Elaine a hug, and I said, that was from Robin. And it doesn't happen all the time, but I have heard from, and now Mom and Dad as well. One of the more dramatic, I think, ones would be, it was a couple days before our birthday, and I had resigned myself to the fact that I wasn't going to be reunited with her in any form until after my passing, and I'm waiting for natural death now. So anyway, we did a lot of, we were called the Travel Twins here in Columbus, big fish in a small pond, and we did a lot of lectures and speeches and so forth on travel. And if you saw my sister and I dressed alike talking about travel, you could find Twin Horizons Travel. We didn't have to pass out business cards. So anyway, I did my first speech without her, and either one of us could have done public speaking without the other. That wasn't the point. The point was sometimes we played off each other when we were talking. And it was very well received. But I walked out of the hall, and I walked into the car, and I burst into tears because it was the first time I had talked about travel without her. And that was about 3 days before our birthday, and I decided to stay at Mom and Dad's that night. Dad had already joined her, but Mom was still living. About 2 or 3 in the morning, it must have been, and I have never in my life ever sleptwalked or before or since. I can only describe it as I came to. It wasn't a dream. It was real. And I was standing by the side of the bed in my parents' guest room, and Robin was facing me. And what woke me up is we were holding each other's wrists. And what woke me or brought me to or whatever it was is that I felt both my wrists being clasped, and I was clasping somebody else's wrist. And I looked at her. It occurred to me later that she was wearing a kind of blue silk lounging outfit that I had been sleeping in. I had the same thing on that Mom and Dad had given me after she died. And I looked at her, and her eyes were clear. We wear contact lenses, so that's extraordinary. And she looked fabulous. And she said, I said, oh, hi. How are you? And she said, I'm fine. And I said, I've talked to, and I named 3 of our girlfriends, and you might want to talk to them. And she said, I will. And there's a in the story to that. And we talked for another few minutes, and then I remembered that she was gone, so to speak. And all of a sudden, I'm standing there by the side of the bed by myself, facing the direction that I've been facing. And of course, I'd been asleep when it first started to happen. So I told a travel client of ours this, and she shared with me that she had cared for both of her parents until their death. And after her last parent died, she couldn't stop crying. And her husband and her kids were worried about her. In the middle of the day, she walked into their bathroom, and there were both of her parents. It was in the middle of the day. She was wide awake. And there were both of her parents, and they were getting ready to go out dancing, which they did a lot. And her mother said, "You have to stop crying." And her father said, "We're having a fabulous time, you know." And she saw them, and I'll tell you, at the Twinless Twins International Conference, which I now do all their public relations for as a volunteer, at the international conference every year, which was virtual this year, won't be next year, we have sessions on grief and mourning. Our keynoter is always mourning and so forth. But I have found that if in between sessions, because we literally come from all over the world, and we have different backgrounds and different faith and no faith. I happen to be Presbyterian, but we don't get into that in the formal sessions. But all I do is go to a cocktail hour and say, "Has anybody heard from their twin?" And the stories with the details and the specifics. I should write a book sometime, too. And speaking of books, yeah. I just wanted to ask that David Kessler, I heard you talking about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And David Kessler, who wrote books with her and actually was in attendance at her death, she asked him to be. He wrote, I loved his first book, Visions, Trips, and Crowded Rooms, Who and What We See Before We Die. I mean, I'm not his publicist, but I just love that book. And it's highly readable and has a lot of anecdotes. He and his partner adopted two sons. And the boys were from a drug-addicted mother, but they adopted them as young children. But his youngest son ended up dying of a drug overdose at 21. And he had done all this research alongside Elizabeth Kubler-Ross about the death and dying. He got permission from Ms. Kubler-Ross's estate, from her family, to title his next book, Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief. It just came out. It's extraordinary. I think since I accepted that I can't be with my sister now, that's what I've been trying to do, is find meaning. Our two brothers say, if I volunteer for one more thing, I'm on the patient advisory boards of both hospital systems in Columbus as a volunteer. I could just start listing everything, but I do a lot for the Twinless Twin Support Group International. And I think what I'm trying to do is find meaning. Both of our parents were fabulous parents. We love them dearly. They raised four children in an intact, loving home in a small town. But they were extremely ill, and their death was a release, and I believe that they are both having a radiant existence now. While I believe that about my sister, there's not a day that goes by in the years since she's died that I don't think of her at least once. And it's sort of analogous to losing a spouse without the romantic relationship. We have a breakout session at the Twinless Twins Conference for people who spouses or support people or siblings. I mean, because like a wife or husband would think, well, they lost their twin, but what am I, chopped liver, you know? And so the gentleman that teaches this is married to a woman who lost her twin, and he made the analogy, and I think this would resonate with some of you. Think of it as if you were a parent and lost your child. Not that our twins are infantile to us, but I can tell you without question I would have gone in her place. I have lost the one life that meant more to me than my own. And it's really interesting to hear that I could, you know, give you, some of them are like we call rock star moments. I think one book I read, a woman who was in touch with her sister, characterized it as a rock. They're not all rock star moments. My dad used to say, "We'll cross that bridge when we come to it."
Yeah.
And my mother would say, "Bless his heart," or "Bless her heart" about something. And I'm not kidding you, at the appropriate times, "We'll cross that bridge when we come to it," or "Bless his heart" pops in my head. And I know it's mom or dad saying that. I'm hearing that. But what was extraordinary is when I told Robin, our three friends that I'd been in touch with, two of our friends are very open to after-death communication. One is not. She doesn't believe that there's an afterlife. all three of them told me about experiences they had in the next couple months, including the one that doesn't believe in it, about they felt that they had heard from my sister. And another one, and I won't tell you all of them, but another one that was kind of interesting, I was again in bed in my parents' guest room, and it was the dark of the night, you know, middle of early morning hours. And the room was pitch dark, and I felt something set down, like pressure on the other side of the bed, like someone had sat on the bed. And I didn't open my eyes. I said in my head, "Is that you?" And I heard in Robin's voice, "Yes." And I said, "Are you okay?" And I heard, "Yes, I am." And then I said, "Do you know when we're going to be together again?" And I heard, "Yes, I do." And then I was going to turn on, I was trying to think, should I turn on the light? And I felt pressure go off the bed, like someone had gotten up and left.
Oh, my
goodness. She was gone. I knew she was gone. And so if I could take just one more minute and tell you about one of the twins, he would give me permission to say this. Kevin lives in Dallas, and he's an ETM. His brother Calvin lived in Columbus, here where I live, and he was a lawyer. And they were both gay. It becomes relevant later. They both had partners. And Kevin got a call from Columbus saying that Calvin had died. And he said, when he first got the call, he said, "I know what to do," because he was told his brother had a heart attack. "I'll get on the next plane. I can save him," blah, blah, blah. And they had to calm him down and explain that his brother had already passed. So about a year and a half later, Kevin went with both the partners to the Gay Pride Parade in New York. And it was a beautiful sunny day, and it was a gorgeous parade. And then afterwards, Kevin asked the other gentleman to leave so he could be by himself. And he sat down on a bench in Central Park. And this gentleman, who he thought looked like he had an Asian background, which again becomes relevant, sat down at the other end of the bench. And they started talking. And Kevin told his story to the gentleman on the other end of the bench, the New Yorker. And the gentleman said, "Well, in my culture, we believe that he is with you, that he would have experienced the with you," and they talked for a while. And then the other guy got up to leave, and Kevin said, "By the way, my name is Kevin." And the Asian gentleman said, "My name is Kelvin." Kelvin.
Oh, I know.
His brother's name, I mean, it wasn't like Doug or Scott, my brother's name, you know. It was Kelvin. And so, you know, like Shakespeare said, there's
so
more to heaven and earth than our philosophies have ever dreamed of.
I think of that whole line all the time. I have several questions, but one question is, could you give me the name of the person who wrote about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's last...
Finding Meaning? His name is David Kessler. K-E-S-S-L-E-R. He was an accolade of hers. He did research with her. The first book I read of his was shortly after Robin died, so it's been out for a while. Visions, Trips, and Crowded Rooms, Who and What We See. It's something like, the subtitle is something like, Who and What We See When We Die. And it really resonated with me because my dad, on his deathbed, saw his brother who had passed. And my mother called out to someone who was on the other side, too, at the end of her life. So it's Vision, Trips, and Crowded Rooms, and he says a lot of times people who are dying talk about taking a trip, which I've experienced.
Yes, not in dreams of that, yeah.
Yes, and then Crowded Rooms is people have sometimes felt they're surrounded by angels or an angelic presence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's really, and he uses people because he was in he was with people when they died a lot. So he gives a lot of lectures and stuff on death and dying. The book that just came out is called Finding Meaning.
Yeah, I got that down. Thank you.
Grief.
Well, you know, that reminds me too of one of my favorite stories written by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and you may know it, and I'll just tell it from memory, not specifically. But she was teaching a class on death and dying, but there were reasons why she and the person she was teaching with were going to stop teaching the class. And it had been so valuable to so many people, but there were serious reasons why they thought they should quit teaching it. And she went out to get her things. She was going to go home. She went out to the elevator, and there was a woman standing waiting for the elevator, but really waiting for her, who had died, I think, a few weeks earlier. And she saw her.
Oh, my goodness.
And the woman talk to her about not teaching the class. She said, you must not stop teaching that class. You must continue it. And they had quite an intense conversation. And so Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, as smart as she was, she said, could I just get your signature? And they went back to the office, and the woman wrote her name down and then left. And so she had her signature. I thought that was so
and it was the woman
that her
had
to done. Say, I would like to have your signature so that I can prove to myself that I really saw you. But she tells it so much better than I did, but it's still just absolutely fascinating.
Well, I would, I mean, I think, like I said, I'm a publicist, but I would recommend this book because our brothers were both mystified as to why I seem to volunteer for everything that comes along. I mean, I rang the bell for the Salvation Army all last December. I'm going to do it again this December. They have what's called Wreaths Across America, where you put wreaths on the veterans' graves one day every December. And we don't have a military tradition in our family, but the first time that the Wreaths Across America, our parents had a Christmas wedding, and it was on their wedding anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
And if I may take another minute, I was distraught after my dad died, of course, and both my parents. And it was a couple months later that was their December anniversary. And I am not kidding you, I would have totally forgotten it. But I was driving home from the office to my parents. I was living with my mom at the time. And I heard in my head, now let me think of exactly how it went. To my leading lady in more ways than one, I almost broke the car on the highway. My mother was in a play in high school, and my parents were high school sweethearts, although they dated other people in college before they married. But anyway, and Dad used to, he sent her flowers to my leading lady in more ways than one, and he got a good line, and he used it for a lot of their anniversaries. So I knew that was Dad telling me, that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, the anniversary's coming up. So I sent Mom some candy and flowers with a card that said, to my leading lady in more ways than one. And then I said, through love's eternity, which is what's on their headstone. My mother wrote to my dad a poem when they married, through love's eternity. And so I had together through love's eternity put on their headstone.
Beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is so nice. And my sister and I loved poetry, and on the back of our, we have a joint gravestone, and the back of ours is a poet. It's Sarah Williams. It's a very short stanza. Though my soul may set in darkness, it will rise in perfect light. I have loved the stars too fondly to be fearful of the night.
Oh,
I don't know if you've heard
that. Well, thank you so much
for
calling in and sharing.
Oh, sure. Some of the twins are using that on their headstones now. But my last thing, and I just want people to know about, is the Twinless Twins. It's twinlesstwins.org. Anyone that lost a twin, even if it was like years ago, I talked to a guy from France, and he said, I wish I'd known about this 30 years ago when my brother died. And it's the only grief group that I've been in, and I've been in a number of them, that there are as many men as women, because guys lose their twins, too.
Oh, that's so great. Oh,
that's very important information.
Thank you so much for calling in. We're glad you did.
Yes, thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Yeah. We have about 2 minutes left, ladies.
Okay. Well, I was just going to listening to Susan. She had some really beautiful energy come through in a lot of ways from her sister, and I really, again, you know, reiterate, by paying attention. You know, she paid attention, and she was listening, and she was opening her senses, and I mm-hmm. think that's really important, you know?
Yeah, she not only availed herself to her environment and what was all around her, but she sought out opportunities to be in the space where she would be working with other people and hearing their stories and sharing her stories, which is another way of helping to integrate and open the door.
That's right.
It's so beautiful. Well, we had some lovely callers tonight. Janet, would you like to leave
sure.
the parting words?
Sure. I think you're cutting out. I was cutting out a little bit there, but I'll go ahead and I'll say it. May
yes.
all beings everywhere with whom we are inseparably interconnected be fulfilled, awakened, liberated, and free. May there be peace in this world and throughout the entire universe. and may we all together complete the spiritual journey.
Beautiful. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you for our listeners. We appreciate you, and we look forward to having you join us again next month, last Thursday of the month.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.